Welcome back to this week's edition of the Midweek Reality Check with Michael Pinto, where I try to keep Wall Street and your money real. President Trump showed off a draft of a letter firing the chair of the Federal Reserve, Jerome Powell, during a meeting with roughly a dozen House Republicans that took place last Tuesday night. Polling them as to whether he should do it and indicating that he likely would fire Jerome Powell. This was according to two people that were briefed at the meeting. The story was reported by the media at 10:30 a.m. last Wednesday, and the markets reacted immediately and violently. Precious metals absolutely soared. I mean, they went no offer. And the dollar crashed, went no bid. The second Trump's letter hit the newswire. Now, I don't think Trump will fire Jerome Powell. He's just putting maximum pressure on him to cut rates immediately. But this is merely a preview of what is in store come next May when Powell is replaced by an obsequious sycophant who will be a presidential puppet, basically, and that will slash interest rates at the behest of the White House. And this begs the question, why? Why would Trump, who I voted for twice, want to force 300 basis points in emergency rate cuts when the stock market is at a record high, the home price to income ratio is at an all-time high, homes are the most unaffordable in history, the consumer price index has been above the Fed's 2% target, which is an asinine target, should be zero. The asinine 2% target for the past 50 months, by the way, the CPI increased 2.7% in June, headline, up from 2.4% in May. So it's accelerating faster away from the Fed's target. Also, most of the tariffs have yet to take effect. They take effect August 1st, so inflation is heading higher in the short term. In addition, the unemployment rate is at an historically low level. Financial conditions are easy. The credit spreads are very tight. Therefore, aggressively, not just cutting, aggressively cutting the Fed funds rate, when all those conditions I just mentioned are present, would pour jet fuel on the inflation pyre, further boosting asset bubbles into the thermosphere and cause the complete and utter extinction of the American middle class. Okay, quickly turning to the stumbling, bubblicious real estate market, it was making news again this week. The record home price to income ratio has simply frozen the transaction market for both existing and new home purchases. That is why home builders' confidence has been negative for 15 straight months, and buyers' traffic came in at the lowest pace in the past 3 years. News was announced last week. Now, some people claim the weakness in real estate offers proof that the Fed should be cutting rates and that Powell needs to be fired. I say the reason for the weakness is not that the mortgage rates are too high, it's that the housing market is the most unaffordable in history. And that is a direct result of artificially low interest rates in the first place. Lowering mortgage rates won't necessarily make home ownership more affordable, especially if it causes home prices to rise. And it's not going to reduce the mortgage rates just by lowering the Fed's funds rate. Most likely what's going to happen is the Fed funds rate goes down, and that's going to cause long-term treasuries to spike, and that's going to send mortgage borrowing costs rising much higher. Okay. The index for the leading economic indicators has been in negative territory for 7 months in a row. The U.S. LEI, leading economic index, fell in June by 0.3% to 98.8. And as a result of that drop, the LEI fell by 2.8% over the first half of this year. Substantially, that is a substantially faster rate than the minus 1.3% contraction over the second half of 2024. For the second month in a row, the rally in the stock market was the main support. It's the stock bubble that's supporting the LEI. But it was not enough to offset the very low consumer expectations, very weak new orders in manufacturing, and a third consecutive month of rising initial unemployment claims. In addition, the LEI's six-month growth rate weakened, while the diffusion index over the past 6 months remained below 50, triggering the recession signal for a third consecutive month. Now, despite this, the conference board who puts out this LEI does not forecast a recession. But they do say economic growth is expected to slow substantially this year compared to last year. Real GDP is projected to grow by just 1.6% this year, with the tariff impact becoming very apparent in the second half of this year as consumer spending slows due to higher prices. Okay, I need to make a turn here and just say a few words about the crypto market. This asset class is supposed to be decentralized. It's supposed to hold immutable transactions, and those transactions are supposed to be anonymous. If cryptocurrencies have any value at all, because they're not rare and there's unlimited blockchains that can be created, if these currencies have any value at all, it can be found in their immutability, their anonymity, and their being decentralized. But here's where that whole thing falls to pieces, because now the crypto crowd is aggressively seeking the approval of Washington, D.C. and Wall Street to support it and justify its $118,000 per unit in the case of Bitcoin. However, cryptocurrencies lose all the properties that I just mentioned once the government and the banking system gets involved. Also, cryptos are supposed to be an alternative to the dollar because the dollar has lost most of its purchasing power since 1913 when the Fed was created. But now crypto wants to be linked to the dollar to give it more stability in pricing so it can be used as a form of payment and a store of value. Stablecoins try to make these cryptos more suitable for transactions and savings compared to traditional cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin, whose values are subject to rapid and significant fluctuations. So where then is the value in these coins if they're linked to the current the US dollar and they're no longer decentralized, they've been bastardized by Wall Street, and they're not rare because there's an unlimited number of blockchains? What is the purpose other than to make Wall Street rich? It's going to be a disaster. I'm not participating in it. I've been wrong. But when the crash comes, it's going to be monumental. We can make money without crypto, believe me. And we are. We must turn to the crucial nation of Japan for just a moment. Japanese long-term interest rates are now the highest since 2008. Yield curve control has been in place for many years, with the nominal yield near 0% from 2016 all the way to 2022. But now the benchmark Japanese government bond rate is over 1.5%, and the 30-year bond yield is 3.1%, because YCC, yield curve control, has ended. The Bank of Japan interventions and purchases in their bond market has led to the central bank owning over half of all Japanese government bonds issued. Japan's government debt to GDP is a daunting 260%, the highest in the developed world, and the yen has lost half of its value against the dollar just since 2011. Japan's year-over-year inflation rate in June was 3.3%. That's the highest rate since 1981. The end of YCC wasn't a genius decision that was made by the Bank of Japan. It was forced on the Japanese people by the BOJ because inflation and the crumbling currency was becoming a serious problem. Well, guess what? Now higher yields are going to become the serious problem for a nation that has a debt to GDP of 260%. Why is this so important? Who cares what happens in Japan? Because rising yields in Japan are helping to drag yields higher across the globe. Japanese citizens now have a viable alternative for purchasing and holding U.S. debt. And that is happening just as the issuance of treasuries is surging, along with record deficits and debt, and as the rest of the world eschews the ownership of treasuries for various reasons. The developed world is ridden with insolvent states with an inflation problem. This will soon lead to a protracted period of rising yields like we saw in the 1970s, in my opinion. Stagflation is coming back to the U.S. with a vengeance. The catalyst will be the government's reaction, their reaction to the next recession. And no, The business cycle has not been abrogated. A recession is coming. I don't know when it's going to happen. All the conditions are in place, but it is going to happen sometime in our future. And that is when the annual deficits won't be 2%. They're going to be $4 to $6 trillion. And that is what's going to force the Fed to expand its balance sheet like never seen before. Like never seen before. To an even greater degree than the massive $4.5 trillion post-COVID asset buying spree that was seen. The result should be intractable inflation and inexorably rising long-term rates. The typical 60-40 portfolio just will not work well in that environment. So to wrap up, our current positioning is 68% T-bills. We have a 2% short position. We have 10% long U.S. equities, 10% long precious metals, 5% long alternative inflation hedges, and 5% ownership foreign stocks. So we remain net long, but with our finger on the sell trigger and watching my model's output assiduously. Until next time, stay tuned. Thank you so much for listening to this edition of The Reality Check, 5 minutes of sanity in an insane world. Please remember, if you are not already an investor with PPS, you can email me directly using mpento@pentoport.com or call the office using 732-772-9500 to get information about our portfolio services. You should also go to Amazon and order my book, The Coming Bond Market Collapse. Subscribers should contact an investment advisor before acting on any information contained in this podcast. No information on this podcast constitutes an offer to sell or buy any financial instruments or to provide any investment services. Subscribers understand there's an inherent risk in investing. PPS is a registered investment advisor.